Normally, being a little extra can be a bit much, but when it comes to healthcare, it pays to be extra. And United Healthcare makes it easy with Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they supplement your primary plan, helping you manage out-of-pocket costs without the usual requirements and restrictions like deductibles and enrollment periods. So when it comes to covering your medical bills, you can feel good about being a little extra. Visit uh1.com to find the Health Protector Guard plan for you.
What's good, internet? It is December 30th, 2016. Wow. You know what that means. We almost beat this motherfucking year into the ground.
Thank God.
Yeah, so we can have an even worse 2017. Let's get
We who knows what tomorrow could bring. I don't, because we're actually recording this a little bit early. We are not coming to you live. We are coming to you from the Brick House in Brooklyn.
Brick House.
It is your favorite podcast.
Yes,
Waypoint Radio.
I hope it is.
Thank you for choosing us as your favorite podcast in 2016. Yeah. I know. I'm not saying that anyone officially gave us that title, but I've heard it from people.
People have said that.
People have said it.
Totally. I've said it.
Joining me to talk about 2016. This miserable year behind us, I happen to have some pretty good video games in it. Danielle Riendo.
Hi, everybody.
Patrick Klepek.
Hello.
And coming to us from over Yon Pond.
Yeah.
From on the other side of the west to the east.
All the way.
Yeah, yeah.
Mike Diver.
The other way.
Waypoint's own.
Yeah. Thank you. I'm from a decrepit bedroom on the south coast of England.
Good!
Perfect. It's where you find me.
A decrepit bedroom
find me today.
For a decrepit year.
Yes. 2016.
Well, it's appropriate, right?
Yeah, it does. So, we did it. We got through almost 2016. 2 days from now, we will be through 2016.
Yeah.
And I don't want to focus too much on the bad shit. We focused a lot on the bad shit. I think every website in the world will be focusing on the bad shit.
Yes.
I get it. It's bad.
There's a reason why.
From people we love who make music dying to people we are terrified of being elected.
Yes.
There are to laws changing and to countries leaving their larger sovereign groupings.
Yes.
Lots of scary things happened
this
year. But also some pretty good video games.
I don't think that
evens out necessarily. But I do want to talk about those video games. So the way we're going to do this is we're going to look inwards to ourselves and find the work we've already done and build on top of that. That's what I like to do.
Yeah.
It's like when you cite yourself in an article, like, I basically already made this argument. I'm just going to link to it last time.
I'm an expert. And therefore.
If you've been going to waypoint.vice.com, waypoint.zone, bazinga.zone, pyramids.com, you know that this week we've been doing the Waypoint High School Class of 2016 school yearbook. All of our articles, all of our superlatives, all of our class clowns, our cutest couples, our most likely to become a teacher at Waypoint High School, all those awards. And we've also done these kind of like extracurricular activities, things like the Waypoint High School paintball team or like the Waypoint High School horror club, things like that. And you should have noticed that there are some assigned kind of leadership roles in those extracurriculars. For instance, someone is the captain of the Waypoint High paintball team. The thing is that right now, while we're recording this on December 21st, 2016, I have no idea who those presidents are, who those team captains are, who those lead time travelers might be.
Yeah.
And so I want to figure that out with all of you and use that as an excuse to talk through some of the things that have happened in 2016 in the world of gaming. So to start, we should start with Monday's category, which is Waypoint High School paintball team.
Yeah.
Shooters had a year.
Shooters had the best year. I'm normally not even interested in a lot of shit. Like, I'll play a shooter. I'm not going
to,
like, you know,
you're here to
stick my
shooters.
Nose up at shooters. It's just not my, like, chosen genre.
Yeah.
But there were a lot of games I truly, like, really got into this year that were shooters.
Let's list out some of the good shooters this year. What do we got? Everybody, let's go around in the circle and name a shooter you thought was pretty good this year.
Why don't you start, Austin?
I probably still haven't played Doom, but I'll put Doom on this list.
Doom's a good one on this
list.
You can't shout for a game you haven't played, right?
My list doesn't go live until the 31st. I'm getting a weird buzz. I don't know. I'm getting a weird buzz. Someone heard that I haven't played Doom. They're hacking
in. That's what it is. Doom guy is trying to call us. It's what's happening. And he's
play my game.
That's what he's saying.
That's what he says.
Yeah, that's how, in his language, that's how he says it. Yeah.
So Doom, people talk to me about Doom really quick. What is Doom?
Doom is a rad shooter that went all the way, balls to the wall. That's the phrase that I think is very appropriate to use in this context. The balls are all over the wall.
Oh,
that went all the way with being... Yeah, exactly. I mean, sometimes it hurts so good. That went all the way with being a fully embracing the goofiness of Doom. The fully embracing, like, the fun... wild 90s video game sort of aesthetic and the music. It also was a really cool game that had some weird secrets and weird platformer stuff and other kind of fun other elements to it.
Yeah, I think Doom is a game that when you talk about a game from the 90s being brought into a modern context, it's an extremely difficult thing to do because you're straddling a lot of different player expectations, audience expectations, right? It's like Doom has to try and service an audience that has never played Doom before while also servicing the audience that loves Doom. And I think what they did really well with id Software and sort of like reinventing what Doom was. I mean, you can look at the history of this version of Doom, which started as essentially Call of Doom. This version of Doom 4 started as a game that... you can see how they arrived there. It was like, okay, we got to take Doom and make it gritty and serious. And so we're going to take soldiers that are dealing with a demonic invasion and, like, what would happen? And, like, in some world, like, I actually still want to kind of play that game.
Yeah, me too. I'm really curious about it.
But I can see why they might have looked at that and said, that's not really working. That doesn't necessarily speak to sort of the essence, the soul of what Doom is or was. And, like, Doom... the game they made is Doom. Like, it feels like it's not, you know, you couldn't climb over walls in the original Doom. But if they had the technology, it feels like they would have done that. Like,
and they would have done it in this way. It wouldn't be a slow clamber. It would be this, like, super rapid, like...
vaulting over a wall. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Totally. It feels like they took what was fun about Doom and made that in 2016. But not in the sense that, like, oh, it means it's got to have pixelated graphics or it's got to have this set of mechanics. It's like they just took... If id Software had the technology of 2016 and they made Doom... This feels like the game they would have made.
Right.
And I think that's like the highest compliment you can give, where it doesn't feel constrained by what it was. It just uses what was good about Doom and makes a brand new game that feels in that essence. And it's, yeah, it is the most video game of 2016.
Yeah.
If that, you know, that's not like a real statement. But, like, people know what I mean when I say that.
All of those reasons are why you gave it the like, most school spirit award, too, right? It's just, like, it came here to play. Like, it gets everybody hyped, and also it's metal as fuck.
Yes.
So.
Oh, great soundtrack.
It's pretty
great
metal. Soundtrack. Yeah, I love what you said then, Patrick, about it being, like, that essence of kind of taking what it would be back then and, you know, like, recontextualizing it with today's technology, you know, just to skew left quickly. That's exactly what Ratchet and Clank was this year as well. It's like what you remember the game being, but that's what they can do now. And Doom was the same for me in terms of, taking those kind of memories of what you played in in my case, the mid-90s, because I played it on 32X because I'm a complete moron. and kind of taking it into the here and now, because I think everyone got a little bit burned by Doom 3. It wasn't a Doom
incorrect.
Game. And,
incorrect.
Oh, no!
Okay.
Oh, my
Stepping
God.
Into
I'm not saying it's bad.
Light bulb trap.
It didn't, you know, that wasn't a Doom game, right? That was,
we're not here to debate.
Another conversation.
Right.
That's the recast.
It's a Doom for another day.
The class of 2004. This is the class of 2016. This is a different.
Yeah, yeah.
We're gonna
class.
So Doom is on this team for sure. Daniel,
Overwatch is also on this team.
I'm gonna add Tracer to this team.
Yeah, Tracer is the face of Overwatch. Uh-huh. And
the butt
it's,
of Overwatch.
Yeah. I mean, she's the face of games this year,
she's
right?
The face of games.
cover of Overwatch. She's been everywhere. So
there it is.
The big action figures of her live in the streets.
I hope so.
Alive.
There's a lot of tracers.
Since the Doctor Who special this year, there's live tracer action figures. Tracers.
Traces everywhere you go. But yeah, Overwatch, I think, was great. And again, I never play multiplayer shooters. Like,
right.
Ever.
Me either.
I think I only ever played BioShock 2 and the GoldenEye remake. Those are like the only two multiplayer shooters ever played.
Right.
Yeah, basically. Well, okay. Close to no, and the ones that nobody really talks about. So I'll footnote that. But this was a multiplayer shooter I really enjoyed because I think it had a lot of, you know, you could play a support class really well and actually felt like integral to the style of play. I liked playing Zarya. She's sort of a defensive specialist. And there are these sort of bright characters and this sort of inclusive community that I think actually really drew a lot of people in who are not always super into shooters.
That to me has been like the big success story of Overwatch is that it took a genre, I think this year in general felt like shooters are reinvigorated, but I want to give Overwatch a lot of credit for that because of how it invited in new communities of players who formerly would not have even thought about playing a multiplayer-only competitive team shooter.
That even have like tiny, tiny little bits of MOBA DNA in
tiny
there too, which
bits.
Again is not a thing I am super well-versed
totally.
In. Totally.
So. And it did it in a way that didn't only bring people in. Like, so it did it, I think there's lots of ways to be dismissive of Overwatch and say, people only like it because they're part of the fandom. They only like the characters. Or people say it's not a hardcore shooter. It's not like you don't have to be pixel perfect accuracy. But I actually think that both of those things fail to like address the fact that it's actually a pretty complex game in which players of different skill levels can learn their characters and their chosen set of characters and become really proficient not only in playing those characters but in learning maps, understanding like where to be, how to play with other characters, how team composition looks like. And those are like big picture esports concerns brought down to a level that – not brought down to, but brought to an audience that has no interest or felt overwhelmed by other games that asked them to think about things like team comp. Like that's an interesting problem to like have in a game. It's like, who should I be to complement the other people in my team? And that's like fun to figure out, but when you go to play a large like MOBA that has 100 characters and you don't have any background in it, it can be hard to get into it. And so for me, the big success of Overwatch, on top of the great characters, on top of the fact that I think it's just a fun game to play, is that it's a really great entry point for players who want to mess with some complexity and learn their character, but who don't necessarily, but who've been put off by other similar games of the skill level, you know?
Yeah,
I'm with Danielle. Like, where I have not. No interest in, you know, when they announced this game, I was like, okay, great. There's the game I will never play. Like, that's fine. And I'm okay with that. Like, I started noticing all these people playing it that were like me. They're like, I don't play these games, but this game is incredible. And I think part of what it does really well is it onboards players that are not usually like, it would be very easy to imagine a version of this game that like just overwhelms you with the complexity of the characters and the mechanics. Because there is so much going on if you start picking apart what's happening in a match, but the presentation, which is what Blizzard does so well in terms of like UI and the polished nature of their games, like this game handled by another developer would have been or could have been a disaster. But the way Blizzard's very specific house approach to how they make games like allows people like myself to get in and feel like they're contributing, they're enjoying themselves, where even when they have a poor match, that they've done something, like they've been a part of it. And that's just a really, like, I probably played, 35 hours of that game, and I'm sort of out of it now. Like, I don't really feel the compulsion to go back, but those 35 hours were, like, some of the most fun I've had with a game, especially a multiplayer game in years, because I've just... we talked about this on our Read Mail podcast, but like the level of toxicity that I ever ran into was so much lower than what I run into in other multiplayer games. Like, I'm not saying it doesn't exist. I'm not saying there isn't a bunch of homophobia and racism and all sorts of awful stuff that is part of that and many other multiplayer games. But what I found was that what also helped is that Overwatch was inherently playable without team speak, without some of the things that make team-based games otherwise not function. I was able to have really fun, compelling games where I didn't talk to anyone, and the game allowed us to communicate to each other through our roles, through our classes, and I find it to be a really remarkable accomplishment in a genre that we otherwise take for granted as sort of like like, well, Team Fortress 2 did it. Like, what is, you know, why does Blizzard need to make one of these? And it's like, then it Overwatch comes along and goes, oh, right.
Especially because we were all really cynical. A lot of people were really cynical about the sort of, like, bringing esports presentation to other genres this year. Of just like, oh, please don't try to – just don't try to force your way into making another esport. I think there was a lot of the compulsion around being dismissive around Battleborn in the lead-up. Besides, like, the sense of humor not landing for a lot of people. It was just like, oh, they're trying really hard to make a hobby-grade game, quote-unquote. And so – there was lots of pushback against that, and then Blizzard managed to walk the line, I think. Mike, did you play much Overwatch?
I dabbled early doors, but never to the extent where I truly bedded in. I actually had a conversation about it really recently on the UK podcast with a couple of people,
right?
And one of them, Alicia Judge from IGN, was saying how they still, as a group of people at IGN, play that every lunchtime. That's what was missing for me. I think it's very much the kind of game that, like, you know, it is so easy to get into, but unless you've got your friends meeting up there regularly, coming back, you know, day after day, week after week, or whatever. I didn't really have, a bit like Patrick says, didn't have that compulsion to go back to it again now. But I mean, like you say, the presentation of it, the kind of way it made it easy for someone like me who isn't really big into MOBAs, who isn't really into online shooters either, and here's somewhere a company marrying those two things. Obviously, their MOBA pedigree is pretty top grade. Although I'm sure Riot would have a few words to say about it. But I just got straight into it. I loved the simple thing of being able to switch a character out, which originally you think that's rubbish. You know, I've chosen my character, that's my guy or my gal, I'm going to do this, I'm going to play this game. And, you know, the first few times I played it, I'd just stick with the one, I'd be an idiot, and I'd just keep going, and I'd die, and I'd keep going, I'd respawn, keep going with the same person. Then once you start just swapping around and playing stuff, then it becomes fun. Then you're learning these new things. And I'm sure, like most people, like, I think, Danielle, you may have asked me, like, who do I main? And I'm like, I don't know. But, you know, it's one of these things. Like, I guess most people have a lot quicker than they would in something like Dota, in something like League of Legends. They have their mains in Overwatch that much quicker because of the turnover of the games. It's so brisk. It's so exciting. It's not these, you know, and when you're having a bad game, what's brilliant about it is like when you're having a bad game, it's over in what, like 5 minutes?
5 minutes.
Yeah.
You're not there for 40.
Because it wasn't who do you main.
Yeah.
Sorry. There's terminology I've missed out on here.
I asked who you ship. The real crucial question with Overwatch, of course, naturally.
Who do you ship? Who do you ship, Danielle?
Oh,
that's no. You have to answer that question because
I was going
to
say
context clues to figure out what we mean. I've done this dog and pony show before. You have to give me an answer.
So everybody knows who I ship.
Hey, I'm the same with you.
You know,
we give them an award.
We're on the same. We gave them an award this week.
We ship Sarah and Mercy.
Hell yeah, we do.
Shipping, Mike, is an action you do in which you look at a piece of fictional work and then you say, those two.
Or they're three, in a relationship, which is where the ship comes from.
Oh, I see. You're abbreviating.
Them. Yeah.
Yes. See, if you'd have specified that was an abbreviation, I'd have got that.
You can't just say, who do you relationship? That sounds like
that makes
R&B lyric from 1996.
Jodeci wrote that. Yeah, it was. Yeah, exactly. You know,
the cowboy guy and the robot probably. Seem likely.
Yeah, that no, that's good.
Yeah,
that's
one
good.
Of the robot. I don't know. One of them.
I mean, there's a couple.
Bastion.
Oh yes,
Bastion definitely
floating,
fucks
the floating.
All right,
robot.
We're gonna be on this one thing forever if we don't.
So I'm good. I'm good with that.
What are some other ones, really quick, that we want to make sure that we include on this general big list?
Heroes, Gemini Heroes Reborn.
Okay, let's talk about that later.
Okay. How about Titanfall?
Titanfall 2, good game. We've written a lot about Titanfall 2. We will also come back to Titanfall 2 in a later category, so I'm going to pause that one also.
Right.
But, like, I've settled for a long time that a game, the mech game I want is the one that reminds me of this two-episode arc of Gundam 08 MS Team.
Good.
Titanfall does that. Titanfall 2 does that. It's really
scratches
well.
Titanfall is also, especially Titanfall 2, because it has single player, is essentially the modern revival of Shogo from Monolith.
Accurate.
In the 90s.
Titanfall, adding it to the list. What else?
I liked Gears of War 4. I had
Gears
a good time with it.
Gears 4 happened. That's true. What
that
was
game
your
That game kind of came and went.
It kind of
did.
Out of
my brain. For that week, it was okay.
I enjoyed it. It was definitely a game I played co-op with my girlfriend. She is a huge Gears fan. She's sort of the you know, the Gears fan of the relationship. But she brought me in. She's like, here's how you play Gears, because I'd only played a little bit, actually, of the remake of the first Gears about a year and a half ago. So she brought me in. She's like, here's how we play Gears. And I had a wonderful afternoon playing multiplayer, and we played like 3 or 4 hours of the co-op.
Right.
Like co-op single player.
Right,
so
Yeah,
it was rad. It was a really cool fun, well-designed game.
Because of our time limits, also, Battlefield 1.
That came out.
People love Battlefield 1. Did anyone hear of a deep Battlefield 1 appreciation?
The single player didn't get as much credit, probably, as... I thought it was interesting. DICE is trying some fascinating, if flawed, stuff with their single player stuff. Mm. And you know, the idea that World War One is basically something that you can't make it not shitty.
Yep.
Right? Like, World War One was a bad... Like, all wars are bad, okay, right? But, like, World War One was, like, a particularly bad war.
Especially bad, yeah.
And they seem to recognize that no matter what you do, like, the game... Like, it's very difficult to humanize that in the way that you make a video game. Things are going to be goofy and exaggerated. And in their single player, they seem to try and hone in on human stories and were successful in some ways and not successful in others. But, like, I admired their attempt to, like, recognize, like, we are in some ways kind of doing a disservice to World War One by making a game that exaggerates and humorizes World War One by what players are allowed to do. So let's try and counterbalance that by acknowledging the human cost in the single player, which, you know, I don't know if those, like, necessarily balance out, but I think it's worthwhile to acknowledge that they tried and acknowledged it was a thing, which is more than most games try to do.
Infinite Warfare.
Patrick liked that, I remember.
Really great robot buddy.
I need to play for that robot buddy so bad.
And also, Salter apparently was rad. I know some folks who really liked the lieutenant. She was a woman.
Salter?
She was rad. Lieutenant Salter, Captain Salter.
Yeah, I think Lieutenant Salter. I think that because...
She apparently was really cool.
Because she's in a fanfic that Robert Rath wrote for
Hell
us.
Hell yeah, she
is. Which is really... It's really fucking good. And it's like the one that I didn't expect Robert Rath to write a fanfic for. If Robert Rath writes like these like deep
very
serious things about the future of war or about, you know, weird gambling machines.
Yeah.
He's I got a fanfic pitch for you. And I was like, oh, word. And he did.
Yeah. It's beautiful. The themes of Infinite Warfare sit gross with me the longer I get distanced from that
game. Really? Why so?
I mean, the general premise, like, it also tries to humanize, like, the cost of war in a sense, but its general message seems to be you need to die in order for, like, things to happen. Like, there's a weird, like, through line in Infinite Warfare where, like, a lot of characters die in that game, and it's always in the context of, like, well, if I don't die, then it wasn't worth doing this. And it was it sends a weird, like, I know what they're trying to say is, like, accomplish the mission at all costs, but, like, it has settled with me in a very gross way the further I get from it. But the robot was pretty good.
Okay.
I feel like
the campaign and the campaign is designed really well. Like, if I separate the themes from Call of Duty, which is sometimes what you have to do, because, you know,
every year.
Yeah, like, especially post Modern Warfare, like, where they just, as we have mentioned, like, they, at least those games tried to acknowledge in some level.
Yeah, but for the last few years, there had been, like, I think about Ghosts, where it was just like, oh, South America, invaded North America.
Yeah,
cool.
Yeah.
That's a, okay.
That was a little rough.
Mm-hmm. Thankfully, some people were prepared. Like, that's the story
good.
Of the game.
Yeah.
That ain't great.
That's a good message.
What else? I feel like there's even more still just to name
super
drop
hot.
Really quick. Super Hot.
Oh, Super Hot is rad.
Super Hot.
Love Super Hot.
And Super Hot VR just came out, and I haven't played it yet, but boy,
it's
I want to.
Good in VR.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure, like, I don't know if Super Hot would... I haven't done my top 10 yet, so I'm not sure where
Fuck.
It would... There's a good chance it would sit somewhere in my top 10, but, like, lower, but I need to play it in VR because I think that might shoot it up, like, 5 spots.
Mm. Yeah, play
it's
in VR.
Pretty cool.
Mike, you play any Super Hot? Super Hot.
I've not had the pleasure, but we had to get it in there, otherwise a whole bunch of my friends wouldn't forgive me. Yeah, I totally haven't had the pleasure. It's one of a handful of titles that I know I should have played this year, but for one reason or other, they just haven't happened yet, but I fully intend to. And like you say, if it's VR, is it VR on everything?
I think it's just Oculus right now.
Just Oculus right now.
Which is not necessarily true because you can download hacks that Oculus exclusive games work on your Vive. So it is Oculus exclusive, but that is, you know.
Yeah,
you can make.
There's a fluid term there.
I just want to shout out Devil Daggers also.
Devil Daggers
this year,
absolutely right.
Also Super Metal. And
someone make Devil Daggers into a game that is not a score attack game because I want the Devil Daggers aesthetic, the gameplay, the everything about it. I just don't want it in a survival score attack game. Yeah. Take it out of that.
So here's my question for you all: given these people, given this group of people, given these games. Who do you think is the captain of the Waypoint High School paintball team? And you think about this, I think, two ways. We can do this like the normal way where we yell at each other for an hour about how Overwatch is better than Doom or how Doom is better than Overwatch. Or I can think about these people and think, who could be the captain of these people?
Could be a good leader.
Of the super hot people, of the robot buddy from Infinite Warfare, of one of the Battlefield 1 soldiers, of, you know, JD or Kate from Gears, of BT and Jack Cooper from Titanfall.
Yes.
Tracer and the whole Overwatch crew of the Doom Marine. Something in my heart says the Doom Marine wants it the most.
Yeah.
He doesn't have the communication skills.
That's the problem.
That's exactly the problem.
Yeah, but he can punch some shit.
But he can punch... Well, the guy from Titanfall can, like, punch a guy through the next wall, right? I mean, that guy...
He is a robot.
...incredibly powered. No, not the robot, even.
You're just saying just the regular guy.
You just
punch.
I think in a one-on-one fight, if you had to, like, fight to be the leader... Doom Marine wins.
He'd probably win.
Except Super Hot Guy also can control time, I guess.
Yeah.
Or is the machine, depending on how you want to read the ending of that game.
I feel like it's going to be an Overwatch character because they can actually communicate and be on teams with one another. And that's like such a crucial aspect of an Overwatch character is like leadership and teamwork and getting along with other people and like getting that goal, getting that payload through.
Because sometimes you have a Doom Marine on your team and you need to figure out how to get a Doom Marine to work
you
with
use
your
him.
Friendly robot buddy.
Yes. Yes.
Now,
and
if
not
I
punch
may make
it.
A suggestion.
Yeah.
Well, that was it. I mean, everyone loves May, right? Everyone looks up to May.
Yeah, everyone does.
May is good leadership qualities.
Yeah, and she can cool you off if you're hot. If you're a little hot,
that's
calm down.
Perfect for Doom Marine guy.
Yeah,
he runs a little hot.
He runs a little hot.
You know? That hellfire that burns in his heart.
She can bring out her little robot buddy, who cools everybody down. She has that little.
There you go.
I think I'm going to. Can we agree that May is the captain of this team?
Yes.
Sure.
You don't have your heart in it. I know you want to be Doom Marine in your heart. I know you do.
Well, at some point, May will fail and Doom Marine will step up, so it's fine.
Oh, no!
Well, listen.
She can have
ice
it. She can have it.
Cold?
She can have it. That's
wow.
fine.
Ice cold. Ice cold.
Doom Marine is fine for letting other people take the glory, and he knows when the rubber hits the road, he's got that shit.
All right.
In British football, I don't know what it's like over there in US sports, we have a captain on the pitch, so that can be May. But we have a club captain too. That's the person that just kind of he's you know they're the real leader. You know,
I see.
So they go unheralded, but you know they're the one who the press know is.
I see.
Really,
the real.
Really got it locked down, so
we'll keep that in mind.
When things turn to hell, literally,
when things go to hell.
Yeah,
you go with
you know.
The Doom Marine. It's also kind of the Doom Marine's fault. The thing, anyway.
It is actually his fault.
Someone spoiled Doom for me. I haven't beaten Doom, but someone got deep into the Doom lore with me. Next up, speaking of hell.
Yeah.
We're going to go to hell.
Speaking of hell.
Of, with the Waypoint High Horror Club.
Yeah.
In my mind, this is like, I don't know if you ever had like a horror club or a science fiction fantasy club. Like at college, we had one that was just like, we're going to watch a bunch of scary movies.
Yep.
And like, we're going to get a little bit of money to do that because the school has some extra extracurricular money.
It's the best part of college.
So I'm going to look at Patrick and Mike because Mike, you wrote this piece. And Patrick, you are our horror buff on staff, like the number one horror buff I know in my life. That's right. I said, who's the horror person in the world? And I said, oh, it's Patrick. And then I said, now who's going to write our year-end recap on horror? Oh, Mike. That's what I did.
That's how it worked.
Inadvertently, yeah.
Yeah, totally inadvertently. So, like, what were the games here that this year, to talk about horror? And I, for me, the lens that I want to talk about this in is, like, it's kind of a broad lens for what horror counted as this year. It wasn't a lot of traditional horror games. So Patrick, what stood out for you?
I remember when we were talking about this category, like, yeah, there isn't. There isn't a lot of like what we traditionally consider sort of like the horror, like you know, games like Outlast 2 were delayed out of this year. You know, last year we had Soma, like you know, the sequel or the follow up from the developers of Amnesia. So there just wasn't a whole lot of that this year. But I don't think you can you can't argue that Inside isn't, like, horrifying. Like, it's more like, is there horror or are the games that were horrifying or, like, creepy or thrilling? Like, it's I always find it funny when I look at, like, the, you know, library and Netflix and iTunes.
Yeah.
Where they have the category for horror and thriller. But, like, most movies can, like, fall under, like, that both of those categories. And it basically just means, like, horror. Are you, like, a weirdo that wants to, like, watch people bleed to death? Or do you, like, and the thriller's like, we don't put those movies in there.
Right.
And so I feel like 2016 was a lot more of, like, thrillers. Like Inside is a creepy, unnerving, but it's not jump scares. It's not going to necessarily, like, weird you out in the way we traditionally sort of throw under the umbrella of horror. I'm not sure if you felt differently, Mike, but that was kind of my takeaway of 2016. Was like, it was different than what we normally consider horror, but it doesn't mean that what falls in that category wasn't worthwhile.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, there was no – we obviously got a bit of Resident Evil with the 7 demo and stuff.
Sure.
But, I mean, the actual Resident Evil game that came out, we shouldn't talk about at all. but, you know
– Umbrella Corps is horrifying, but for a reason right. Yeah. Put it in this category.
It's pretty terrible. There was Layers of Fear, I suppose, which was more kind of straightforward horror, but didn't do it for me very much. But
it
yeah,
was like, trying a little too hard.
Yeah, it was.
There was the Zero remake. I had fun with that. But
Yeah,
that did come out this year.
Yeah. We've had some HDs, but yeah, Inside. I mean, there were bits of Inside that just creeped me out incredibly. The first encounter with that underwater creature, mermaid, merman, mm-hmm. all the hair everywhere, and some of the sound design in that game is just perfect. You know, horror works on a lot more levels than just, you know, what you're seeing with your eyes. And that's exactly the same reason why Oxenfree got to me a little bit under the skin. Like, the sound design in that is just engineered to set your hairs on end and get the ends of your fingers just sort of numbing on the pad, and you kind of don't want to press on, even though it's kind of a cutesy, kitschy, you know, of aesthetic
teen,
looking game.
Like
that,
80s throwback,
yeah.
Stranger Things adjacent.
Yes.
Very much.
By a couple months,
But I mean, I know who did the music. I don't know who a guy called Scientific.
Also last year did the soundtrack for Galaxy.
Oh, nice!
Really fantastic, very analog sounding synth stuff. I don't know what he records on, but yeah, super good
synths. He records on synths.
He does record on synths.
It's like
sure.
Dag. Yeah.
He also has a Side Story Oxenfree soundtrack and he did the soundtrack for Mr. Robot Exfiltration.
Ooh.
That mobile Mr. Robot game.
Nice.
It was okay.
Yeah.
So, check that out.
He's weirdly, I mean, because I mean, those kind of things are kind of more like, I guess, like sci-fi, spooky kind of things. When I was at Indiecade in Paris, it turns out he's doing the music for a game called Old Man's Journey, which is just like bucolic, like really pretty, like puzzle game. Like literally, you control an old man walking somewhere. But anyway,
that adds up.
Yeah, sure, why not? I mean, and Ed Smith wrote a piece on this for us pre Waypoint, but I think it's on Waypoint now. About, you know, that there's parts of Firewatch that play like a wonderful suspense.
Totally.
You can throw that into horror. You know, there's a bit in, you don't want to spoil it for anyone, but you know, there is a bit of that game, like a relatively long section where your mind's playing tricks on you. You're racing ahead of the story. You're trying to fill in gaps that you think are there to be filled. And, you know, with what might be happening, you know, there's this strange camp, like maybe, you know, supernatural forces are involved, and around the time there's a bit where you get clunked on the back of the head and you're like, what the hell?
Right.
Like, am I being hunted out here? Like, is this going to be like a, you know, a 180 turn? I thought it was just a nice little walk in the woods and now there's someone else out here with me. Like, that's terrifying. Like, you know, there's this unseen presence. And like, the thing that scares me more than monsters and stuff is just like, you know, when it's just a regular thing gone wrong. Just gone wrong. Like a guy, you know, a man that's wrong. Like, that's why some of Inside is so haunting, because, like, you know, you see us in a lot of the horrors of that game, and you see what we do or what where we're going with a lot of that game with, you know, various I don't spoil any of it because I know there's so many interpretations of it as well. I think I read an IGN thing I read to about like 20 different interpretations or something. Someone else was telling me recently it's like a whole meditation on cancer or something.
I could totally
and
see
out
that.
There but there's in a year of very few kind of quote-unquote traditional horror games, like Inside definitely stuck with me the longest.
Totally.
I would argue what probably is my favorite horror game of the year is Thumper.
Ooh,
oh,
right.
Nice.
I hadn't even thought about that.
You know, when I wrote about it earlier this year, that's kind of the connection I made. It reminded me a lot of, like, specifically, like, 70s Italian horror and,
totally.
And aesthetic. It's a game that, especially, I recently had a chance to start playing it in VR, in which, like, the tension of that game is amplified by your proximity to the Beatle and the music in virtual reality,
yeah.
and the crazy visuals. Like, it's enhanced several fold by being virtual reality, but I think it's still very effective on a monitor. But that game, like, I've never played a music game that made me feel unnerved and sweat, and that game did that, which is a pretty profound
totally.
Accomplishment. So I totally think of that game. Like, there's a reason they call it, the developers coined the term rhythm violence for that game, because I think that helps give you a sense of, like, what that game's aesthetic and vibe is. And I definitely felt that way playing it. Where I mean, it's a game that I don't play for long stretches because it just leaves me feeling in a weird place. And so I absolutely think that while it may be sort of a music game, I'm not sure there are enough music games released these days to have a category for that kind of stuff anymore. But I think if you think of that game more holistically, it is totally within the horror universe and was the one that made me feel the most on edge while actually playing it.
Yeah.
I love that. I think that's a really smart – I'd completely forgotten that. And also, like, I didn't stop playing it because of that, but I did stop playing it because I was, like, not in the place to be in a game that intense.
Yeah.
it's not a game that you can just be like, nope. I got 15 minutes. Like, let's play
exactly.
Thumper!
Totally cannot
Gotta get your Thumper pants on for that
yeah.
one. You
so
know?
I think – is that about it this year for a game – for horror games that
I think
we,
it,
that we
I think it is.
Interacted with?
I think Thumper Beetle probably wins because it's the most intense, and I think it would eat that kid from
it
inside
would eat that
alive.
Kid from inside, it would.
I mean, unless you want to.
The beetle would eat the kid.
Is it the beetle or is it something else in Thumper? Is it one of those giant faces?
Oh, the face thing. Spider skull guy.
No, I think it's the beetle because here, like, here's my pitch for the beetle. Here's the pitch the beetle makes.
All right.
It's not one of those big face things. No one would vote that club president. Ever.
Well.
They would try to intimidate you, but the
we'll
Beatles
see what
say,
happens to democracy in America
okay,
this
right.
year.
Right.
I don't
it's
know.
If
we're talking
right.
about
it's
2016.
One of the giant face things, Danielle, fine. I was going to give a whole speech about how the Beatle would, like, show that you could progress through. Like, it would lead you into horrific situations, but it would still, like, we can watch this thing. It'll
lead
creepy,
you through.
No, you're right. It's the giant creepy
yeah.
face from Thumper.
2016.
Giant creepy face from Thumper typed.
I feel like it had a weird name.
I'm sure
it was like
did.
A friend.
I love
my buddy.
I'll look it up.
Yeah, it's all right.
Next up. Let's just take a quick break.
We should probably take
get my feet under me.
Need a minute.
I just need a minute.
Need to take a knee.
I need to take two knees. I need to.
I need to take both knees
and sleep. Next up, Wednesday, we had the drama club.
One of my faves.
And on one hand, I was real quick. I just want to say that we have. This is fun because we get to talk about who our favorite performers were this year, our favorite, games that had voice acting and that had great stories and narratives and all that. But I do want to say that the article that went with this award is a really great piece from Ian Williams, kind of looking at the SAG-AFTRA strike over the last year, talking to a bunch of people involved with it from different angles. Definitely go check that out on the site because it's, I think, a pretty good piece of reporting that helped that helps you, like, if you've been on the outside of that and kind of hearing bits and pieces of it, going there is a good resource. Just kind of like, okay, why is this happening? What's the takeaway?
Yeah.
So definitely check that out. And given that, I do want to start here because this award is weird, right? It's not even an award. This club is weird because I do want to talk about primarily, like, the great characters of this
yeah.
year and the great actors of this year, so to speak, both in terms of characters that were written well and characters that were performed well. And I think it's hard not to start with Firewatch probably because
yeah.
that game is pretty – I mean, it's built on two things, I think, which is, like, environment and performance, and narrative, right? Like, with narrative heavily on that performance from Rich Sommer and Sissy Jones, and I think they both just, like, were exceptional. I think there were times that I, like, deeply just not despised, but, like, I was just not into fucking the main character in
yeah.
a way that you don't like people in stories. And that's not a thing that happens in games super often, where you can have a sort of bitterness towards someone or a kind of resentment towards them and like how they're unhealthy or how they are, like they don't take care of their own mental well-being or how they treat other people in their lives while also playing as that character, especially. Like, it's a hard thing for games to do, to put you into a position of someone who is not necessarily the best person.
Especially with that resorting to like, he kicks puppies and kills children. Exactly. It's like, no, he's just like has some shitty stuff with relationships.
And also,
you know,
isn't a bad person and also can be funny and goofy and playful, but also like gets into his hole sometimes and just like doesn't want to deal with people. Yeah. And I think it gave you a really great choice to do that. It provided a great voice work for that character and then also give you a fantastic foil in Delilah, Sissy Jones's character, who felt like a real character who had her own interests and her own kind of motivations and her own habits, but also was reflective enough or flexible enough to adjust with the way you were playing your character, making choices to find ways to bring out different sides of my own like choices and my own understanding of the main character, Harry.
Yeah.
So that's my like. Definitely want to include the characters from Firewatch in this drama club. I can't imagine that game with I can't imagine a drama club in 2016 that doesn't have those characters and those performers in it.
Yeah. So. I totally agree. I also just really love games actually taking on something like doomed relationships or difficult relationships in a really human and really painful and excruciating way that actually reflects what reality feels like sometimes.
Totally.
Like it's so rare that relationships are even in games, and usually when they are, it's something kind of transactional. Like I love Mass Effect, love me some Mass Effect, a lot of awesome space fantasy and awesome sexy space fantasy.
But also,
that's not how it works. You don't talk to somebody and say the right dialogue and then, oh, it's sexy times and now everything's cool. Like that's not actually how life works. I know it might be a lesson to some
folks,
some people, but it's hard and difficult and so difficult to make relationships work, and sometimes they don't even when you do your best.
Totally.
And this game really acknowledged that in a very straightforward way, and I loved it. And I also love that it's pretty and in the woods. And
it's,
I think,
super pretty and super in the woods.
I like those things. I also want to give a huge shout out, I think, Alex Hernandez, who voiced Lincoln Clay in Mafia 3, did bang up job.
I think a lot of people in that game did a bang up job.
Yes.
I don't know how deep into that you are, Patrick, but like I think
I'm like 10 hours now, and that like the open world part of that game doesn't do much for me, but the performances
they're
in that
fucking
game are
so good.
So good.
Like just even just it's not only the performances, but it's like the way they capture them in the animation, like the way they present them.
That priest is so sad.
That priest
is so sad.
He's so good.
And, like, reflective and...
The way he shakes his head, it bums me out.
There are moments of just, like, the flicker of movement in your eye or in a character's eyes of just, like, having a thought and then having a second worst thought that's, like, really so fantastically done. All the poor... Like, ranging from, like, bitterness over how someone treated you in the past or how, like... The way it seems that time is on a collision, you know, history is on a collision course with disaster. Like, two goofball weirdo John Donnelly in the CIA who was just if you haven't watched, here's the thing. Can I spoil a thing?
Yeah, you can.
Mafia 3. Heads up, jump ahead 2 minutes if you don't want to know.
Can I add, I haven't played any Mafia 3 yet, but go on.
This is a thing
anyway,
that has nothing to do with the main story. Actually, I'm going to spoil two things in Mafia 3.
Go for it.
Real quick, just while we're on the topic of
Mafia
3.
We're doing it.
Two things. So jump ahead maybe 5 minutes. The first thing is nothing to do with performances, but is a cool fucking thing that I don't think most people who played that game noticed. Or when I brought it up on Twitter, a lot of people hadn't noticed it. On your way to the final mission in Mafia 3, the music on the radio changes to modern covers of the old songs that are in that world.
So good.
And so it takes on this very like True Detective vibe of like modern rock, like bluesy rock cover of 1960s classic. And it's a bunch of different ones. You can change the radio station and find different ones that like suit the mood you think Lincoln Clay is in. And it's like a really brilliant touch that is not going to be noticed by anybody this year. And I wanted to shout that out. The second thing is there's a post-credit scene in that game. The thing happens, there's multiple different endings, you know, like I'm not even going to try to spoil all of those. Who cares? But there is, I mean, they're good. I think all the endings are really fantastic. I beat that game right after beating another game that I was really unsatisfied of the ending. And then beating that immediately after, I was like, oh, right. People know how to end game sometimes. It's actually nice work. The post-credit scene is John Donovan. I said Donnelly before. It's John Donovan, who's the CIA agent. It's his, like, documentary section. You know, his, like...
His stand-up, basically. His,
like, talking to the... But it's him talking to the CIA. It's found footage. Or not the CIA. The, right. The Congress, like, special commission that's interviewing him. And at the end of it, they're like, oh, so is that it, basically? And he's like, there's one more thing. And that other thing is, I found something. They're like, why were you involved in this to begin with? Which is a good question, because why was he involved in this to begin with? And he says, when I was over in Nam, he says, do you know where I was when JFK was shot? And do you remember where you were? And the guy's like, oh, yeah, I was at home. It was sad. It was really sad about it. He's like, were you? Because when I was over in Nam when it all happened. And I was next to so-and-so, and I was sad, and blah, blah, blah. So I determined when I got back, I was out here because of JFK. And when I got back, I'd find out what really happened. And I'll tell you what happened. I found out that Sal Marcano was involved with the killing of JFK.
Oh, my God.
And I was like, what are you talking about? Like, the whole commission was, and he's like, and that's not all. Guess whose names I saw on that on his paperwork, Congressman? And the Congressman's like, what are you getting at? This is nonsense. Turn off the camera. He's like, no, keep the cameras on. I want everybody to see this because I want them to know I'm coming for them next. And he pulls out a gun and shoots the Congressman who's been asking him questions the whole game. It's amazing and absurd. It's so good. People are looking at me because I'm screaming. People are staring at me in this office.
Good. It's good. What? It's a good thing.
It's amazing. It's like this moment of like, oh, is this what's happening with the series? Is this what's next?
Here's what we're doing.
I don't know. I don't know what's next.
That's amazing.
If it's that, then goddamn. If the next game is like John Donovan goes after the
Mafia JFK
connections. Or it's a weird, funny, like, oh shit, why was he in this game? I don't know. We'll add a little thing at the end.
Yeah.
It's really well performed. Anyway.
That's pretty rad.
So,
I like
that's on my list. But yeah, Lincoln Clay's voice actor, Alex Hernandez, was fantastic. And really love seeing, you know, I think this was a year where blackness was on, where it was in games in a way that it hadn't been. African American characters all over games. Marcus from Watch Dogs 2 was fantastic. The stuff that happened with Horatio was bad, but was still, like, their interactions were fantastic. And it's been a year where, like, I didn't think I would see black characters interacting with other black characters in games. And I did. And they were all really – those interactions were fantastic. So I want to shout that out also.
Does Anything Virginia else? Rate in that as well?
Yeah,
or
Virginia
is that...
rates, like, for the opposite reason. Like,
yeah, I was going
to
say.
You were a big Virginia fan. Talk to us about Virginia.
I don't know about big. I played it again just last night to kind of put some pieces in order in my head. I enjoyed it enough. And when I played it through and I enjoyed it, and I read some people who really didn't enjoy it. So that kind of sat with me for a while. And I thought, well, what did I miss the first time that you know, maybe I've interpreted it wrong, maybe I've missed some things. And I just a little bit of a slip of the tongue there. I watched it again. I played it again.
I
do enjoy it. I do like the way that when you play it for a second time, the pieces kind of come together a little bit clearer. You can see exactly what Ann Tarver is your character for the most part, what her partner in it is kind of doing it all for. It will kind of make sense a bit more. You understand better the connection between and your character's dad and what your partner's been through. And again, there's you know, it's such a short game. It's one of those games that I think everyone should play if they can, but I can absolutely guarantee that, you know, 99% of people who do play it aren't going to fall in love with it.
Right.
But weirdly, here we are talking about Drama Club and stuff. You know, a lot is suggested through symbolism, a lot is through very, very slight gestures, which is, you know, really saying something given the kind of low detail artwork. There's not a single word in the whole game, and I kind of admire that. You know, here is this very, very heavy narrative game, and they've not got anyone saying anything. And even when they give you documents, they show you documents sometimes, so you can think you can get to read it, and you'll be able to press A or whatever to skip ahead. But it will skip on for you. It just gives you that little taste, that little thing where, you know, that's why you're investigating this manner. That's how this character connects to that character. But now we're going to take it away because we don't want to leave it dwelling on it. You know, we want to keep the kind of the mystery and stuff. And I appreciate it. I mean, it got like all the kind of Twin Peaks parallels, Early Doors. And some of them were X-Files. You know, I didn't really get the X-Files thing until I played it again, until I realized that your partner in it is basically, you know, an older female Fox Mulder.
Right. Almost,
you know, hidden away in the basement, you know, pursuing sort of uncovering corruption within the FBI.
Yeah, that's the angle that I ended up liking the most on my second. So I beat it, and then I beat it. It was really toughy. I played through it once, and then I played through it a second time. And I went into it the second time hoping to figure out more about what the weird sci-fi stuff was, or the weird, like, magical realism, Twin Peaksy, X-Filesy stuff. It ended up not being the focus of my attention the second time through. For people who don't know, Virginia is a game in which you play this woman, Ann Tarver, who gets... Ann space Tarver. No, I didn't just mispronounce Antarctica or Ann Arbor. Yes. Ann Tarver, who is a woman of color, which is an important thing for what I'm about to pivot to, who joins up with another woman of color to become an investigator and go look for this missing kid. And along the way, again, we're going to be spoiling stuff today. I should have said that at the top. In fact,
spoiler cast.
Maybe I should have. After this, I'll do a quick pickup that you can input, Tim. So you're playing Ann Tarver, who is this FBI agent who works with her partner to look for this missing kid.
Normally, being a little extra can be a bit much, but when it comes to healthcare, it pays to be extra. And United Healthcare makes it easy with Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they supplement your primary plan, helping you manage out-of-pocket costs without the usual requirements and restrictions like deductibles and enrollment periods. So when it comes to covering your medical bills, you can feel good about being a little extra. Visit uh1.com to find the Health Protector Guard plan for you.
And along the way, ends up with, like, weird visions of buffalo in the middle of the streets and masked figures and all sorts of kind of surreal things. And I wanted to figure out if I'd missed something. At the end of that game, is, like, a freight train of, like, overt symbols that you know that you're supposed to, like, what's the buffalo mean? Like, what's the bird mean? It's, like, very heavy-handed, I think, in those things. But the stuff that actually is a lot more subtle and a lot more interesting, and I think those overlap, but I think it's more subtle, is that it's also very much, I think, a game that wants to talk about the relationships, the ways in which structures operated by whiteness, by white masculinity, utilize people who are women and people of color to, like, self-police those spaces to keep them white spaces. Specifically, you end up being – and this is a thing you know from the jump that I did not realize the first time through because of the thing Mike was just talking about. It'll show you a document and then it'll rapidly move on. You get a second assignment at the beginning of that game, which is to report on your partner. That you're really, like, internal affairs, trying to see if she is up to some shit. And the big conflict towards the end of the game is you and her – She kind of finds out that that's what you're doing. And then you take some acid and things go wild.
Whoa.
But the second time I played through, I was picking up on all these other cues about the way that men were looking towards women in that game to do emotional labor for them, to do creative labor for them, to get their hands dirty. That it was, you know, your partner's mother had done a lot of the same investigation in her past of figuring out who was corrupt and figuring out that, like, people were being pushed down for various reasons. She'd been part of a bunch of, like, real life student groups in college that were leftist or political groups, and, like, that ended up being a real surprise to me that stuff was in there, because this is a game made by a couple of Brits, a couple of white dudes in Britain. I believe that's true. Is that true?
It is a British game, yeah.
It's a British game, and I don't know the team composition. I know that Lewis Gordon did a really great interview with one of the people who made the game, who's a white dude from England. And I think that the restraint shown there is what I wish had been brought to the more wild, sci-fi stuff, which I thought was just either one step too close to Twin Peaks, like the bar scene, or one step too just, like, out there. I don't know. It was a little frustrating. But the stuff that they were restrained about, I liked it a whole bunch.
Yeah, I liked the cult stuff. The cult stuff made more sense second time. We've already said that we don't mind spoiling things, right? But yeah,
yep.
The aliens side of things that's kind of thrown in there. I think you kind of, it's kind of in there three times, but none of it really. On that second play, I couldn't fit it in.
I think it's just
losing it didn't lose anything from the game for me. I was quite happy for it to not be there.
Yeah, if it had not been there, I think I would have been happier for it. Yeah. I think that my eventual read on it ended up being like, oh, this kid is torn between two things. Either he can stay in this town and become another kind of miserable old white dude that he doesn't want to be because he can see them for what they are. Like, he sees an act of infidelity that makes him understand that the infrastructure around him is corrupt and bad, and he wants to get the fuck out. And there's kind of a desire to be taken away there by the aliens. And then it's like the cult stuff is like, oh, it's a white mask and they're killing a buffalo, and like there aren't any buffaloes in Virginia anymore because white people moved there and killed them all. Like, that's also the game is named Virginia.
Gotcha.
So,
well, now I don't need to play it.
That's the stuff that's like,
yeah, well, I actually am very curious
you
about
should
it.
Play this game.
Yeah.
But also I wish that stuff was just a little more reined in.
Yeah.
Sorry, I didn't know I'd have that much to say about Virginia, but I never got to have that Virginia conversation, apparently. So.
Well, it's the drama club. You get to let it all out on stage.
I brought that drama.
That's right.
Couple other things this year in terms of performances. Anything else stick out? Because I know there's stuff.
I mean,
Go ahead.
I was going to say the most drama club game of all was The Witness. But
yeah, well...
We'll talk about that on another day.
We sure will.
A lot of monologues in that game.
I want to give a shout out for beautiful hamminess to Aidan Gillen, who just makes Quantum Break such a enjoyable.
I will add Quantum Break movie, like
thread of loveliness and ridiculous overacting until right at the end, and then he ruins the whole game. But Yeah. I think, Patrick, you wrote something about how he ruins the whole game at the end, but that not through his acting, just because.
Well, that was because the last boss battle sucks.
Yeah.
But what I appreciate about A Quantum Break is what I appreciate about Max Payne is that Remedy has an appreciation for letting people just chew through scenery.
Mm-hmm.
They have an appreciation for B movies. They have an appreciation for just like letting people wildly overact in a way that I super appreciate.
Yeah, I wanted to. It's funny when we're talking about shooters. I almost mentioned it then because Quantum Break actually plays a lot closer to Doom than I think a lot of people tried to play it as.
Oh,
where
yeah.
you have to keep moving forward to do anything. You can't. It's not Gears of War. It's more Doom. Anyway, let's crack on.
I think two more things I want to shout out. One is drama in two different ways. One is that I think it's a game that has a lot of systemically driven drama, in that it's a game that's filled with all these characters who have needs and desires and wants that then clash together in ways that make dramatic things happen. And that game is RimWorld.
Yes.
And the second reason it's dramatic is because, boy, RimWorld was a tough thing this year for a day or two.
Sure was.
There was a really fantastic article that went up on Rock, Paper, Shotgun a few months ago, maybe a month and a half ago now.
Yeah.
Maybe less than that. Because it was after we launched.
About
a month ago, that dug into the way in which sexual attraction worked in that game, that revealed that the way it worked for men and women, not just sexual attraction, but like attraction in general, was different in a way that like reflected some perspectives on the way world and the biology function that were like a little like, ugh. And it was a very dramatic evening on Twitter, let's say.
It sure was.
Worth going to check out that piece and to have like a deep thought about what you feel about creators and their politics and their games. And that's a game I really enjoy and also really disagree with his politics. And we've covered it. We're going to continue to cover it as it goes forward. But it's definitely – that was one of those moments of like, man, boy, do I disagree with you about some fundamental shit.
Yes. Very, very much so.
And the other one, a game that I actually think I is – it's gunning for my number one spot. And I don't want to dig into it too deep because I'm – we'll see, and it's not a game that has much voice acting, is Quadrilateral Cowboy.
Oh, yes.
And I just want to bring it up here because if the video game – or sorry, I almost called it the Video Game High School, which was our working name before I realized that was another thing.
Another thing entirely.
Waypoint High Drama Club had someone who made sets for them. They needed a set director. It would be the crew from Quadrilateral Cowboy.
Absolutely.
And it would be Brendan Chung, who is the lead designer and game creator on that. That game is beautiful. It has amazing sets, and it pivots between this like really smart puzzle design and really emotive, kind of an affective kind of dioramas that you're in for these brief moments where it's like you and your pals hanging out on a rooftop watching a sunset or like riding mopeds down hover mopeds down a future highway.
Yeah.
It's my favorite game for a lot of reasons this year, and it's a game I'd forgotten about and recently went back to and was like, oh right, like this is a game that before I played it, I had been burning out and forgotten why I like games. In many ways, it was like the anti-Witness this year, and yeah. I really needed that. Even though I like The Witness more than I thought I'd – more than – now, a year later almost, yeah. It turns out I just have some fondness for The Witness, even though at the time I was kind of like, grrr, about it. So yeah, I just want to say Quadrilateral Cowboy, definitely check that out, please.
Yeah.
So who do you think is the lead actor or actress or the director? The director, I think, is maybe
the director of the
head
club.
Of the drama club. Who's putting it on?
It does seem like Lincoln Clay might just take it for himself.
That's
I think
true.
He might. I think he might.
No, so here's the thing. Is maybe what he's going to do is he's going to say like...
Charismatic leading man, too.
Right. Yeah, he's both. He's the actor, director, lead. The lead and the director. It's like, you can work with me or against me.
Yeah.
Like, he's just ready to go. And he's going to build a coalition of people who work for him. And if the people...
I mean, I could see him putting Harry in, but being like, Harry, you fucking owe me.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, exactly.
Uh-huh.
I gave you that.
Same with Delilah. I feel like, totally. Yeah, he would give her a faction.
Yeah. In fact, he gave her a fire tower. He's
yeah, that's
like,
right.
You go in
run
there, you
this
hold
part of the forest.
But the problem is eventually they're both going to be like, well, who gets the stage? And then he's going to have to decide. And it's going to be bad.
It's going to be messy.
It's going to be messy. All right. Lincoln Clay, very proud of you.
Yeah. Good work.
Next up, this is going to be one I'm going to rely on you a lot, Patrick, because I know you have a lot of thoughts about time travel. I know it's weird for a high school to have a time travel club. But it's been a weird year in which I think a number of games have done time travel and done it pretty well.
Really well. So at least the ones on here, yeah.
Yeah, the ones on here have for sure. So Patrick, let's start at the top. When was the first time this year you thought games are going to do time travel?
Gemini Heroes Reborn.
I don't know what is that.
Licensed video game spinoff of the reboot of the Heroes NBC television show that had one good season, except for the season finale where they should have killed off Siler, but they didn't because they wanted to keep around for a ratings boost and he was about to be
this was the real drama
Patrick,
club.
Patrick, all we need along. You to be come on back down. I get it, Heroes took a turn. But can we just let's talk about Heroes Reborn, Gemini Heroes.
Season 2 was not very good.
If you could go back in time, Patrick.
Season 3 was like a circus. Season 3 was like a circus, people.
Was it? You know, one time I walked into my apartment and my roommate was watching Heroes.
Yeah.
And she was like, oh, Heroes is real good this year. I'm like, oh, what's it about? And she's like, on one side there are the I almost said mutants. The heroes, the powered people. What are they called in Heroes?
I don't know.
The next gens, the millennials.
Sure.
On one side, there are the millennials that have powers, and they want to be good with humans. And there's another side, they're the bad guys. And she was like, no, like sort of. But like they have a leader who thinks that like the humans are always going to keep us down. And like they're the next step of the millennials are the next step of human evolution. But also, he was like Magneto. And she's like, nah, he can control the earth. He can control rocks.
Control the earth.
He can control rocks. And I was like, that's still Magneto. And she disagreed.
Oh.
Gemini Heroes Reborn came out this year.
Okay. It did. I couldn't tell you why I played this game to begin with. Like, I really don't.
I think you wrote about it for Kotaku earlier in the year, you were like, someone insisted I play this game. Like, someone on Twitter yelled at me.
There was someone that said, like, hey, like, no one's going to play this game. Someone should play this game and like point out that it's pretty good. And if you tell people, maybe they'll listen. And they're right. Like it's not a game that you need to you don't need to have played or rather watched any Heroes to have any appreciation for it. I have no idea where it fits in the lore of Heroes, but it's a moderately scoped like sort of B level game that has really interesting uses of time travel powers. It like doles them out very quickly. The game doesn't stick around too long, more than Dishonored 2 or
Titanfall 2.
Titanfall 2. Yeah. Like it's not just a level. Like it's a whole 3 or 4 hour game that deploys all these interesting powers. Like you have the ability to like peek into another world like temporarily, so you can like set yourself up, kind of like in Dishonored 2. Dishonored 2 allows you the same. Sort of power where you can sort of set up what you want to do to the other timeline by just taking a peek over there, as opposed to a game like Titanfall 2, which forces you to sort of completely swap to the other side and then sort of deal with it. And it's just it's part of the reason I have such a deep appreciation for the Gemini Reborn is because of what it is, right? Like, it's a Heroes spinoff game.
Yep.
Like, it should be fucking garbage. And the developers that were assigned that could have looked at it and gone, this is... We don't know.
Said, like,
we don't have to do
electricity.
This.
She has electricity powers. She can shoot people with electricity. She can use her electricity powers to power up doors that need to be open. She can use zap a door. She could stun enemies. Like, and they could have called it a day.
Well, it could have been a bad game.
Exactly.
And instead, like, it's a good game that is wrapped up in a license that makes most people not want to play it, because why would they want to play a Heroes game? So, like, it sort of pales in comparison to what was accomplished in Titanfall 2 and Dishonored 2 because of sort of the scale and budget and of what those two games had. So it's like, as much as I like Dishonored 2 and Titanfall 2 and what they did, like, I appreciate Heroes more because of what it accomplished, given what your expectations for it were, given what it was probably expected of it from the people who put it into production. Like, it's a great game sort of in spite of itself. And they just made this really smart, interesting time travel game that I'm shocked I liked as much as I did, and I wish more people had played it.
Yeah. Also this year, you mentioned the other two, Titanfall 2, which, you wrote a really great piece on that level specifically, Effect and Cause, and Dishonored 2, which I have not yet gotten to that level.
Oh,
I hope
so
to
good.
Before we record this before the podcast goes
sure.
live.
Sure.
Sorry. Yeah.
And Doom and so many other things.
Take a drink.
Yeah. Drink it. I mean, Doom almost as
open
time
up this
travel.
Gin real quick.
Yeah.
Shout out to my boss for getting me a dope bottle of gin for Christmas. Thank you.
See put that in our drinks.
We'll make some gin and tonics when everyone's in the office again. Danielle, tell me about the time travel level in Dishonored 2.
Oh, it's called A Crack in the Slab, and
good
it
name.
Is so good.
Yeah.
Oh, my God. Well, we already know I like Dishonored 2. I think it has some of the best level design and sort of mission design in a game this year, and maybe even beyond that. I think it's really, really impeccably well designed because it respects player choice. You actually can go about things with multiple sort of valid approaches, and that always makes me very happy to feel respected as a player who wants to do things their way. The Crack in the Slab mission, light spoilers. The rest of your powers are taken away, at least at first.
Uh-huh.
And you can only kind of swap time and use the heart.
Okay.
And that's it. And you're swapping time, you're kind of cutting between two timelines, and you have this sort of magnifying glass-esque object where you can look at what things look like in the past or in the future, swapping between the two timelines. You can check that out, and as Patrick said, kind of plan your way of what you want to do by kind of taking a look at it, then setting yourself up for what you kind of want to do, whatever action you want to take, and swap and sort of use that to your advantage. It's amazing. I actually think it's more impressive than the Clockwork Mansion. I know a lot of people also really like Clockwork Mansion, and it is incredibly rad and intricate, and yes, it's clockwork.
Right.
Clock-like in that fashion. But I think the real sort of triumph here, if you had to, say what is the absolutely most impressive level in this impressively designed game, it'd be a Crack in the Slab. At least so far, I am in the Crack in the Slab right now.
Oh,
I also have not quite finished the game.
Not only
by the time this goes up, but at least I got
familiar story.
I got there. I'm in that. I'm
crack
in the crack
the slab
right now.
Feels like the alternative title for 2016.
Yep, pretty much.
It sure does.
Slab of rotten beef.
Briefly, Titanfall 2, Patrick.
Yeah.
Good.
Good.
A good game.
Also, I'd say part of what's, we're collecting these games here and highlighting these specific levels, but part of what I think makes, Titanfall 2's cause and effect level is a very well-designed stage, and the feature I wrote where I interviewed the designer and explaining how they built that and how it was an idea from years ago brought into Titanfall 2. It's all interesting, but part of what makes Dishonored 2 stage effective, part of what makes Titanfall 2 stage effective is that it is a one-off unique idea that is brought into the game, utilized very well for this brief period of time, and then tossed away.
Yep.
And like that's a really difficult thing for a game to do, to build like what was probably not at least in Titanfall 2's case, I know it was not an easy mechanic to build, and so I'm sure it was not an easy mechanic to build for Dishonored 2 either, but to have the restraint to both surprise the player and then take that away, because taking it away is the smart thing to do.
Yep.
It leaves you with the feeling of, man, I wish I had more of that, which is a better feeling than, ugh, like I wish they would just stop doing this.
I get it, yeah.
And it's that surprise factor that makes those level like they're great levels on their own, but when placed within the context of both those games, they're even more fun
totally.
Because they're well placed, they're well designed, and they're well contextualized, and they come both at the 3/4 mark of both
yeah.
games, so that you get this nice just kind of breakup of the formula you've been playing in before.
You already at that point you understand how to play those games successfully. You understand the basics
yeah.
enough. So then they're like literally like here's a fourth dimension of play, which is like not a thing we've said, I don't think, this year about that time travel stuff is like, oh, like you're giving me a fourth dimension to move in here, which is like literally you're doing that for me, which is cool. It's a binary movement, but it's still really a nice thing. And like all of a sudden wall jumping isn't there's an extra layer of wall jumping or to the wall jump, to the traversal, to the combat. For me, that was the thing that made Titanfall 2 a little more fun to play than the Gemini Heroes Reborn stuff. Was just like, oh, the combat remains tough for me and like rewarding to do a you know, jump off of the wall and get a shotgun blast across the room and then switch time and go into a slide and then do a melee attack. The combat in Gemini Heroes Reborn was like, yeah, it's there. It was there, and like maybe shouldn't have been there. Maybe I would have enjoyed that more if it was just a stealth game. I don't know. I'm still excited to see Dishonored 2, though.
Yeah, it's really good.
The other stuff here, really quickly, we already talked about Superhot. Superhot has time,
yes.
doesn't time travel in it, but it's time manipulation,
time bending,
yeah,
for sure. And then there's one that I only just realized needed to be on this list, and I think that says a lot. It's Quantum Break. It's literally a game about time travel.
I like that. I like Quantum Break. Like, it's not, it pales in comparison to Remedy's previous works. You know, it is no Alan Wake. It is no Max Payne. But I really enjoyed playing Quantum Break. Like, I am profoundly upset that Quantum Break's lack of success
yeah.
has convinced Remedy that they aren't going to make games like that anymore. And that may be it may be the right financial move, but it is not the right move for Patrick's heart.
Yeah.
Well, it's just too bad because they make games that are wholly unique despite fitting into sort of, you know, a lot of contemporary gameplay archetypes. And there's just something about the vibe of their games. And if they are no longer making single player games, it's really going to bum me out.
I can 100% say, having talked to someone at Remedy about 3 days ago, that they're not ditching the single player thing completely. So,
that's good.
Yeah,
they definitely have that in their plans. But just like you, Patrick, I really enjoyed it. And for all of its, I mean, it was poorly, you know, it was poorly marketed. It came out at not a great time. The TV thing threw people having to, you know,
the TV thing is bad. The TV thing was a bad idea.
It didn't need to be there. It totally didn't need to be there at all. Very little of note really happened in those shows. Certainly nothing that couldn't have been done in very, very quick. Not even cutscenes, just stuff that happened in front of the character. You know, you could walk a character through that stuff. Or even assume, I can't remember their names now, but the agent who's for a while chasing your character and then she kind of helps you. Like there are whole parts of it like where she's in it. And I would just like to play those bits of her. It would have been a nice change of pace. But yeah, like you said, the whole thing's obviously about time travel, and that makes Aidan Gillen look really weird. Like the first few scenes with him are just so bad. Like, come on, Remedy, like you're better than this. But
yeah.
I think it's one of those. Who was I talking? I was talking about ratings recently with someone, and obviously we don't do reviews or anything. But Quantum Break's one of those games that, like, you know, if you were forced to stick a mark on it, you go like, yeah, it's 6 out of 10. But it's a good 6 out of 10. It's a 6 out of 10 you should play.
Quantum Break is like when it's like late at night and like you load up Netflix and you see this movie and you're like, eh, like maybe it stars Nicolas Cage.
Yep.
There you go.
Like,
maybe.
I don't know. Like, I let's see what this is. Let's like roll the dice.
If someone announced a Quantum Break Nicolas Cage movie tomorrow, I would have zero surprise.
Yep.
And you get to the end and you're like, you know what?
Yeah.
Not bad.
Yeah.
Glad I watched that.
Yeah.
All right. So, who is like, who goes in first? They open up the time travel portal, they break it. They break time travel, they understand it. Who is the leader of the time travel club? I don't know if it's a president. I don't know what role that is. Time captain.
Time captain?
Time captain.
You know, I'm gonna nominate Emily Caldwell.
I know you are.
But, you know, everybody knew I was going to say that. Because you're from the future.
I'm going to second
I haven't played
Emily.
That. Okay.
Yeah, mainly because I'm looking at a picture. You can't see this, and no one listens to the podcast, but I'm looking at a picture of her right now. across
she
my
looks
room.
Like a time captain.
She just have a big Emily Caldwin poster.
Yeah. No, it's okay. just some detritus, some gaming stuff that my wife was really desperate for me to put in the loft. But there's a there's a picture of Emily Caldwin staring at me. And
I can
kind of
see it in your glasses.
She's intimidating you, intimidating you.
She's definitely okay. down with Danielle. Austin.
It's going to be Emily Caldwin. We're going to take a quick break. I have to go and cry about my life.
Ugh.
Emily Caldwin, time captain. Oh, captain, my captain. Bye. Bye.
I'm unwilling to provide a counter argument because you've deflated my ability to speak.
I thought it was going to be the Titanfall guy, but Emily Caldwin, I'm going to go to the bathroom. We're going to take a quick break.
Sounds good.
Twenty minutes on the clock.
Here we go.
I'm going to stop talking about time, but we're back with 20 minutes on the clock until we have to stop because Tim Barnes has to go record somebody else's podcast. Apparently, there's more than one podcast at Vice Media. That's a sound that podcasts
That's
make.
The podcast sound.
We have two more categories left. I'm going to zoom over one of them, not because it's not important, because I think it is. I'm going to zoom over it because I don't love the name we came up with for it, which is hashtag Occupy Video Games or the Young Politicians Club or some other sort of like social activism group.
Yeah.
I think this year had a couple of games. It had games in more spaces than I expected that wanted to say something that about the world and politics.
Yes.
Danielle, you wrote a piece about this.
Yes.
For the list.
I think there are three games that I focused on the most with this. One of them being my number one pick for Game of the Year, and that is Even the Ocean. It's a game I've talked about a lot. I've sort of evangelized it a lot, but I think it's really, really unique in certain ways in that it genuinely sort of blends its gameplay, which is sort of a 2D platformer that's about balancing energy, and it effectively does that and in a very fun and sort of interesting way. And it also has a story that kind of hits two incredibly important, I think, political sort of angles. And one is it has a sort of environmentalist message. And the other is the sort of message that comes out of it, which is about the importance of people organizing and sort of speaking up when their leaders are shitty and corrupt and doing bad things. And of course, it's there's a lot about sort of being a person of color. There's actually a lot about being sort of a model minority that I think is really interesting and not something you
that's
see.
That's not a normal. It's not something you see in a common. Not
right.
Normal.
Not something
not
you see in a
conversation.
In a typical sort of fanciful looking 2D platformer with pixel art. Not necessarily
right.
a topic you think it's going to,
right.
Comment upon, and I'm speaking as a white person saying this, it felt like they did a good job with this, and it felt like they sort of wrote from the heart when they were making this game. And it's like a tiny two-person team,
right? One of the things that I actually that you hit on in your piece about this a couple of months ago or a couple of weeks ago now was that they managed to be convincing and thoughtful without being too didactic.
Yes,
which I think is like a tough thing to do, because when you have put a lot of time researching a political or social issue and you've done all of your homework and it affects you deeply personally, it can be very easy and understandable to shout from the mountaintops.
Yes.
To really, like, how can you not fucking see this? And so when you take that other step to be like, all right, in order to actually make my message clear to people who will resist it, I'm going to like do my best to come at them from an angle, to charm them, to bring them in, is a tough thing to do.
Yeah.
And I don't think it's the only way you can do things by any means, but I always am impressed when someone can pull that off. So good job to – what's the name of the team?
The Analgesic Studios.
The Analgesic Studios.
The Analgesic – no, they're wonderful. Shout outs to them. They also made Anodyne, which was a favorite game of mine from a couple of years ago. I think they make thoughtful, really good games in sort of old school paradigms, but with new mechanics. And
the other two games we wrote about, I don't want to get too deep into them because we just don't have the time now. But, and also because we've covered them extensively, is Mafia 3 and Watch Dogs, which both have their faults, but also were surprises, I think, because those are both games where I was like, oh, they're going to fuck this up.
Yes.
And I think Watch Dogs has a fuck up in it, but it's still generally a warm and thoughtful place to be in, which is what I want my open worlds to be like.
Yes.
And they both tried really hard. They're both very genuine.
Yeah.
I haven't played Watch Dogs 2, but, reading about the problems you had with it, like, it's not like that game came from the wrong place. Like, and I think that's true of both Mafia and Watch Dogs 2 and a lot of the games that tried this year. It was encouraging to see them come from, like, big budget, multi-million-dollar games, like they swung for the fences, and you know they weren't all home runs. But
to not be cynical, like that's the thing. That was maybe a thing that was impressive about Mafia. Also, is that like Mafia is dark, and like it gives a fuck about the violence that Lincoln Clay causes, but not in the way that it, like there's no smirk. There's no like it shakes its head at what happens, but it's not like. That's America.
Yeah.
Like, and sometimes that rock star model can really work. But
like, with Bully. Yeah.
Like with Bully. Right? I think it can. I think it can totally work. But it's not – there was a long time where it felt like people thought that was the only model to doing an open world super violent action game. Obviously, Saints Row had been doing it differently for the last – for like 5 years or so. And like in Watch Dogs 2 feels like the Saints Row, the fifth I didn't wasn't going to get.
Totally.
So I'm happy with that. But we should move on only because go read the article, please, for sure. And I also just want to say briefly, lots of little games have also continued doing
yes,
the job.
And thank you for making
cackling politics and social issues and all sorts of stuff. So, like, keep doing you. I want to be clear that I don't think this is just like, yay, AAA is finally doing it. But also, like, I'm happy that's starting to happen a little bit.
Yeah.
Last category, last group. It's Saturday morning. And it turns out people shouldn't be in school, but they're back in school because they got detention. They got Saturday morning detention. They had to wake up early,
yeah.
Drag them. Mom, can I get a ride? No, we're getting the bus. It's Saturday. The bus isn't coming.
Walk your ass to school.
I don't care if it's snowing and uphill both ways.
You got to go.
You deserve it.
Yeah. In fact, you better make it both ways. You don't walk downhill home, boy. That's what they said.
Yeah.
And so we have detention. And we have some.
There's a packed detention. Yeah. This is like the crowd detention room. This is not. We're not talking about the Breakfast Club. There's like two Breakfast Clubs here. Actually, I think is what's going on.
Yeah, I want to know who the worst. I want to know who the worst offender is for sure. And I want to know. I want to know. Just like it's a lot this year. It's just been a lot of stuff where I've been like, man. I think it ranges from like games that should have been good and were not. Things like Mighty Number 9.
Yeah.
Things like Homefront the Revolution. Like, that's just not a good game.
Yeah.
Star Fox Zero is a game Is Zero the number on it?
If you don't know what the name is, then that says everything.
Metroid Prime Federation Force.
Yep.
Battleborn. These are all games that were just like, nah. Like, y'all tried, but nah.
Yeah.
And then there are other things. As I said, I don't want to just focus on just like shitting on games that we just didn't like. Because there are other things that are like, I think maybe the biggest one for me is PR this year.
Oh, yeah. Yep.
Between over-promising and under-delivering or mis-promising, I'm deeply sympathetic for the crew at Hello Games. I'm glad I'm not in their position. And I like No Man's Sky more than most people. It will probably find its way onto my top 10 list. I put 60 hours into that thing. Whew. Like, I'm that dude. But also, y'all... Please, someone should have stepped in, either someone from Sony or a different PR person at Hello, to make sure that like the messaging was on point, and it just wasn't.
I wonder if
it's also the messaging after that game was released was
right.
I know what they were going for, and they ended up doing what I thought they were going to do, which was we just won't say anything till we have a real answer, which is here's more content for the game. But I think they did a great I don't think that there should have been more done. They shouldn't have just ignored the conversation happening around that game. They shouldn't have. Even now, they have not acknowledged sort of like what happened. And it's an interesting approach to just be, well, here's just more stuff in the game. We're going to try and make this game better. But I think they've burned the bridges to a lot of people who will never come back. Because
which is a shame.
Without at least just saying, look, sorry, this game wasn't quite what we said it was, but we're working. Like, I don't know. There's a way to do it, and they didn't do it. And I don't know how much of that is inherently their fault, how much of that is our fault. I mean that like as a collective, like sort of like media and game
fake
fans.
Fake news, man.
That exactly. Well, but you know, just like the narrative that developed around that game was both their fault and then our fault.
I wrote a week before that game came out, someone got a leaked copy of it and beat it over a weekend. And the response at that point was this just intense, overwhelming, like, no, that can't be possible. Yeah. It's Infinite Planets. That person has a – his game isn't really finished. And they did end up doing a really substantial day one patch that changed things and did make it harder to get to the center of the universe. But the fundamental truth that he'd found was, hey, this isn't an infinitely big game. And so I wrote a piece about that that was really about this weird desire – that is maybe not that weird. This notion of like the last game, this thing that we can Uber escape game. To yeah. that would satisfy us indefinitely. And that was like a term that I saw used again and again by fans about No Man's Sky. Was like, this is the last game I'm ever going to need. This is the last game I'm ever going to buy on the PS4. This is the last game. Like, I'm not even going to pre-order any other games this year because I know this is the only game I need. And that came from somewhere. And partially it came from really good trailers. Like, really effective trailers
Incredible,
on their
beautiful,
part.
Beautiful, yeah.
But it also came from the way we covered the kind of data-driven, procedurally generated, like, algorithmically created stuff in that game, or where it was really tempting to just be like, you know, like, it's only six people. Six people are making a world that's infinitely big, and it's going to be a joy to explore. And, like, it's so easy to get seduced by that stuff. It's so easy to get seduced by that stuff in other fields, too. It's why we saw a lot of people talking about data journalism in general this year with the election results or the poll results. Like, there are conversations to be had about our relationship with technology and algorithmically generated information. And I don't want to, like, knock No Man's Sky to the ground as, like, the whipping boy for all of our belief in the big algorithm out there. But, like, I definitely see a lot of our hope that it will save us, and I don't think it will. I think that's the lesson for me from No Man's Sky, a game I like a lot more than most people, is I wish it had been I wish they had run this algorithm and then picked 200 really good planets.
Yes.
And said, like, here. But
here's your universe.
Here's your universe. Here's 500 even that are really good. We went and visited 1,000 and we picked 500 that were dope. Like, go or have fun.
Even if the first couple were, right? Like, even if the game curated just the first hour and said, now you're on your own. Good luck.
Or, like, what if every station or every system where there was an Atlas station was one planet or two planets that were, like, handcrafted
yes.
so that you knew you would find somewhere, like, touched at least or handpicked to be really good. Yeah. That way you knew that you would get – or from a pool. Like, there are all these things that – again, we're playing armchair designer here at this point. But, like, I think that those sorts of things indicate that what this has taught me is I want there to be this mix of algorithmic content and also handcrafted stuff.
Well, just like data algorithms on their own don't do anything, like,
yep.
or at least in our, you know, currently we're not there, mm-hmm. and like you need a human touch to sort through what that is, and I think that's what was ultimately, if like anything was missing from that game, it's exactly what you said there, is just the human touch to interpret the data, and instead they allowed the player to sift through that data, and as it turns out, that's a boring fucking job.
Yep.
Yep.
That's a good analogy. Mike, what was on your naughty list this year?
On my naughty list? I wanted more from ReCore. I think we all did.
ReCore.
Yeah. There's a good game in ReCore.
Yeah, for about
an hour. I forgot about ReCore.
You know, for an hour or two, it's all right. And then you do the same thing over and over again, and that thing isn't that fascinating to keep you doing it. I still love a lot of it. I think it looks tremendous at times, and it's I don't know, it had a character to it. That was good, you know, it felt mm-hmm. like it had a bit of soul in there. I was thinking about this the other day, like I don't think I played many bad games, like genuinely, like, unapologetically terrible games. Like, I looked at what was on, like, the Metacritic, like, you know, worst scoring games of the year thing they publish every year, and I don't think I've played any of them. So I've managed to avoid the tripe, you know, the absolute garbage. I mean,
Destiny Rise of Iron, massive disappointment for me.
Disappointment.
After coming from
Taken King was so good.
Yeah, Taken King was like what I was looking for when I played Destiny, and then I thought, okay, I took a year off. Rise of Iron, let's do this. Like, I'm ready to come back. And clearly I'm waiting for Destiny 2.
Yep,
like
me too.
That expansion made it so clear that hey, like, this is great for like the super hardcore Destiny fans. That's fine, but like for the folks who I think there are a lot who are like me who are like. Brought in by Taken King, saw what the hardcore people saw in Destiny, But the Rise of Iron did nothing to capture that a second time. And if anything, like, made me again disdainful for what that game is and what it gets wrong, at least for me. Like, it's ultimately, like, my biggest problem with Destiny is it's extremely difficult to find the fun. And in the same way that No Man's Sky forces you to sort of, like, find the good planets, like, Destiny forces you to sift through just so much to find that core that is just beyond, when I mean that, beyond the course, like the actual shooting, which is like second to none, probably
still the best.
It's,
yeah,
it's probably
still incredible,
if not the best, like one of the best shooters of the last couple of years. But all the other stuff, it's so tough to find it and find it consistently. And Taken King did a pretty good job of wrapping that up for you, and Rise of Iron did a bad job of wrapping that up for me. And so
terrible job.
I was disappointed by it because I wanted to get back into Destiny, and I just bounced right off it a second time. It made me angry because I was like, I wanted to get back into Destiny, and it's like this was clearly
ready
not made for me, and instead what's made for me is probably whatever's coming next year,
which I'm excited about. The other PR troubles this year, I just wanted to say, like, it wasn't just over promising, it was also just like misunderstanding the tone that you should probably bring to some of the subject matter at play. You know, Battlefield 1's PR or social team, I guess, is really what we're talking about. Whoever runs these Twitter accounts and the Deus Ex Mankind Divided marketing team, not the team, but like whoever handled that stuff. I don't know if there's a specific person, it was a group. I don't know if it was an executive said, "Yeah, do that." Who knows? But both of them were so off point on their messaging, especially because the teams that made the game were like really on point about some shit. Specifically, there were some Battlefield 1 tweets that were just, like, the most just flippant about what was a real terrible war. Yeah. Like, comparing the number of people who played your beta to the number of people who died is, like, not a good look.
It's rough.
It's counter to what the game itself tries
exactly.
to do.
Exactly,
like, the thing we talked about before where, like, you know, I think Battlefield 1's campaign is kind of boring, but I admire their attempt to point out that the setting they're choosing is inherently it's a problem, like, because you have to erase the actual human cost in service of making it a fun game in the Battlefield mold. But at least their single player tried to acknowledge that, and what their social media stuff did was essentially erase that. And, like, you know, this is, I think, the next game you're going to bring up, like, does a similar sort of thing in misrepresenting what the game attempts to do. I think that second game maybe is less successful at what it attempts to do.
Still some stuff in there that was so the Battlefield stuff, just briefly, was like they made tweets that were like GIFs of like a person with a flamethrower saying when you're too hot for the club, and like, no, do not. Like, you just bring it back a little bit. That isn't even the game you made.
Yeah.
Deus Ex Mankind Divided, from their original trailer last year when they first brought out the term mechanical apartheid, but then, like, they also used...
It was Augs Lives Matter.
Augs Lives Matter for augmented people in the cyberpunk universe. And then... just completely bumbled interviews where they said they weren't trying to be political when they used the phrase mechanical apartheid. They wanted you to use to come up with your own judgment on that term.
And there was a doubling down of, oh, we said Augs Lives Matter, but
we didn't know about Black Lives Matter.
It's like, are you kidding me? Yeah, that was not good. I actually was. I feel like that was even.
But
maybe
then the game had a worse. Few quests and a few questions. Yeah, definitely, that was for me. Like,
that was
like,
real bad,
man. And the games themselves, like, in both cases, were really trying to address these things. I think Deus Ex less overall successful. I think, you know, the people with cybernetics are just like oppressed minorities is like a tough. It's not a one-to-one comparison.
It's the whole economic side of that.
There's a whole economic argument that kind of gets messy there. It isn't just like you were born with a cyber arm, right? Like, there's all sorts of – especially in that world where sometimes people get cyber arms because they're rich and want cooler cyber arms. Like, it's very messy. But there were times in that game where they did want to talk about police brutality. They did want to talk about privacy and security and get into that messiness. And if I was writing that game – I would be real frustrated.
Livid, I think is the word. I would use.
At the ways in which this sort of like the nuance I would have wanted to bring to it, and the nuance that they did bring to it, just it was a mismatch. So PR, hey, do better.
It's also I think there's something about that incident that's interesting because okay, this is gonna sound weird, but the word political has been politicized in a way that I think the reason you probably had the writers or designers, I can't remember whoever that interview was, that said, oh, we're not trying to be political with this. Like, I think when they say that, they mean something different than what that means on its face, right? Like,
right.
It's hard for me to believe in their heart of hearts that they're not trying to be political with the game.
Of course.
But when you say the word political or politics, the takeaway from that is immediate, conjurings of social justice warriors and a lot of other stuff that word comes with a lot of baggage these days. So I think I agree it's weird to say, oh, we're not being political when you're going to adopt a political term that was dominant in 2016. But I can also see, like, when they're talking in their, like, marketing and PR meetings, like, the fallout of saying, like, we're being political in our game for, like, is rough.
This is the thing with Mafia 3, which was one of the super successful for Take-Two. And, we had a great interview with Charles Webb in which he was like, yeah, of course this is going to be a political game.
Right.
Like, you can't do this and have it not be political. Obviously, we're not trying to be didactic. We're not trying to preach. We don't have a message that we want to get out there specifically. But we want people to think about this stuff. And we're going to figure out a way to do that that is thoughtful and good on its own merits. And, like, more of that in 2017, please.
Yes, please.
One more thing I want more of in 2017, also about PR. About 2.5 months ago, the thing that happens when you're in this industry, this is my final thing on PR, my final thing maybe for the podcast, because we're running out of time. When you're in the industry we're in, when you're in games journalism, the PR companies send you things sometimes. They send you
This is good.
Send you things like, oh, here is a copy of the game for you to review or whatever. We don't do review, we just be a critic about. Here is a t-shirt. I'm like, okay, I'm going to put this in the pile with the t-shirts. This isn't even my size. Like, okay. Here is a coaster, whatever. Sometimes I'll send you a soundtrack. And I'm not going to name names. I'm not here to get anybody in trouble.
Nobody's in trouble.
I'll send you a soundtrack, and sometimes they do it in a cute way, like, oh, it's on a fake floppy disk or it's on a fake cassette tape or whatever, like, but it's really a USB drive. And so someone sent us one of these earlier this year. I was like, oh, wow, cool. This game has a pretty cool soundtrack. I'll put this on shuffle or whatever. Put it on. I'm going to start flipping through it. And like, oh, there's like 20 tracks, 15 tracks, whatever it is. And then there's one of them that just said recording one or something like that. I was like, why? What is that? Like, what? And then I loaded it into iTunes and it said like Serato recording one as the title. I was like, uh-oh. For people who don't know, Serato is like a digital mixing, like a DJ board, basically. So you load in MP3s and you can scratch it on like this digital board instead of being physical. And I was like, I got to hit play on this. And mixed in with this game's original soundtrack was someone's like private DJ mix.
Yeah.
And immediately started playing Kendrick Lamar's Poetic Justice, but like chopped up in a really bad way. And then it was just like straight through. Like, if I have time, I need to just put this up somewhere and then do my like listen guide. Like my breakdown to a live, we listen to it together somehow on the internet.
That's a good idea.
There's a moment about 50 minutes in where it's just like super loud white noise for 3 seconds. So just shout outs to the PR guy who gave me a hot mixtape.
Secret DJ.
Secret DJ. Secret DJ PR. It's your boy DJ PR.
Yeah.
I don't know what the PR, I'm trying to find PR. Fat Rhymes. I don't know.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Fat Rhymes is all right.
It's all right.
It's not that bad.
Who do you think is the worst offender this year? Also, cameras, we're out of time, but cameras were really bad this year.
The Witness.
Also, The Witness was
my
bad
worst
this
offender.
Year.
I loved half the game, and I utterly hated the message of it and the other parts of it that are... Yeah.
So I think the brief 1-2 on the message for me is just like what we already said about No Man's Sky. The data will not save you.
Yeah.
Right? Like, pure rationality is not the way forward.
Don't be a statue.
Don't be a statue.
Be a human being.
And the thing that sucks is that the post-game in The Witness actually does that stuff.
I know.
There's an audio log where it's just like a long speech like all the other audio logs. And then there's a break, and this woman sighs. And she's like... And then like another person comes on the audio log thing. It's like, hey, I'm going to go to the store. Do you want a sandwich? She's like, you know I hate sandwiches. And I'm like, oh, my God. Where was all this humanity in the rest of this game?
Totally.
And I wish it had more of that. So
yeah, I agree.
I think, Danielle, I'm going to defer to you. I think the biggest offender this year No, I think it has to be PR.
It has
to be
On Lives Matter. Definitely. That's the biggest offender by far. But like, if you're talking about a game that was.
That's 2016.
Deserves detention.
Yeah.
It's, there you go.
2016 is going to be behind us in just a couple days. We can do
so
it.
So close.
Thank you so much for sticking through this extra long episode.
Yay.
Thank you, Tim Barnes, who's falling asleep but has
Thank
to go
Tim.
Do another one of these with somebody else and advice. Good luck, Tim.
Go, Tim.
You can find Tim at TimBarnes451 on Twitter.
Yeah.
Danielle, where can people find you?
You can find me, Danielle R.I. on Twitter, and I think I'm on Facebook as Danielle Riendo Writer.
Mike Diver, what about you?
I'm just at Mike Diver on that Twitter. Get in there early.
On Twitter.
Name.
Yes, yeah. that's the key. You got to get on that. You got to get on Elo. Got to get on Peach. Got to get on, what's the Mastodon? Yep.
There you go.
Patrick, what about you?
You can find me at Patrick Klubik on Twitter and Pete Klubik on Facebook.
Woo!
Awesome. And then you can find me at Austin_Walker on Twitter, at AustinWalkerGames on Facebook. And you can find Waypoint at twitter.com/Waypoint. Facebook.com/waypointvice. You can listen to the song Miss You by our friend
of the show,
Bowen, at waypoint.zone/Bowen. Go to waypoint.vice.com for all of the year-end stuff we've been doing. My list will be up tomorrow. My list is not up yet, which means I'm probably right now this second like, I should fucking play Doom. I need to play Doom.
I gotta beat Doom.
I gotta play Dishonored 2. I gotta play so many games.
Yeah.
I'm going to catch all of y'all in the future. You can catch me in 2017. We'll get back to it. Peace.
Want flexibility? Take yoga. Want flexibility with your health insurance? Check out United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly medical, dental, and vision coverage that may be right for you. More at uh1.com.